welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Feature. And today I have a fabulous horror film, and I mean fabulous. New creature feature. I kind of like it. When the Trash Man Knocks, I have director Chris Wellesley Moore in the house. Welcome.
Hi.
So let's start at the beginning. I mean, you, I would say, play a prominent role in this picture. You have a lot of heavy lifting to do. You got explained a lot to me as we go, and I mean a lot.
Right.
How did that feel as directing it and acting at the same time?
Some days it was good, and other days it was really not so great because, you know, you can only sort of delegate so much, and if you're doing the directing and you're also acting, I think when I wrote it, I thought it was a smaller part. I considered it more of a supporting part, and then once you start to make the shooting schedule and you're like, oh, wow, I'm working more than three days here. I'm working like quite a few weeks, and you kind of, because the way we shot the film was kind of, it was like we would shoot maybe two or three days, and then we would stop, and then we would shoot like another day the next week, and then shoot two more days here, and one day here, 3 days there, and it was kind of touch and go. So it didn't really register until we were actually doing it, and I was like, oh, this is a lot of responsibility. So I don't know if I would take on a role quite as large the next time, but I learned stuff, I guess. So.
I guess my major question is, when you're shooting that, I mean, you're directing, I mean, and your character does all the heavy lifting. I don't mean to be rude. He does. He explains a lot to me as he goes. Right. Did you have to prep for the character, or you just said, no, I know what this character is. I'm going right into it. Especially your character has a big arc. He really does change as the film goes on.
Right.
Or maybe that's you just losing it as a director by that point. Because
Well, I mean, yeah, at a certain point, was it really acting? You know, I guess, he is the one that kind of explains everything, which those kinds of expository scenes aren't really fun to do because it's kind of like, it feels like pulling teeth. So you kind of have to find a way to make it somewhat interesting. So it's not just like you're just going to repeat these facts, you know, and just, but I'm trying to think if there was any real, I mean, of course I learned my lines. That's the first prep, but a lot of it came pretty naturally. I mean, the character is sort of based on a lot of people that I know. So I kind of took little parts from each person that inspired it, just the way he talks, the way he walks, the way he carries himself, his hair, the way he looks when he drinks, you know, like there's all these things that I kind of have seen from other people in my life. So that kind of preparation was probably, I don't think I'm making any sense here.
You're making perfect sense. You've seen the film.
That is sort of the main stuff that I did besides just learn the lines, which there were many lines, which surprised me because there's a whole scene kind of towards the end where it's about 6 to 7 minutes, pretty much nonstop of me just yakking. And that was difficult. That was not
which fun. I quite love. My favorite line from that is when you're drinking with somebody, he says, "You've had a lot to drink." And you said, "No, you've had a lot to drink." And I'm looking at your wine glass. It has not moved from the beginning of the scene to the end. I'm like, yeah. He wasn't drinking at all. I understand the other guy's been drinking the whole scene because he doesn't stop drinking. Yeah. I don't know what your direction was to that character to keep drinking, which he does a great job.
Right. Yeah.
And no, I'm like, he still has the same half a glass of wine he started with.
Well, because my character's been drinking for the entire film and kind of up to that point is the first time he's really kind of sobering up to an extent. I mean,
he's had a little bit
to drink, but for the first time, he's actually kind of trying to be vulnerable because for the rest of the film, he's kind of running away from even talking about it. He doesn't want to discuss it, whereas his mom is constantly thinking about it and talking about it. He took kind of the opposite approach because he kind of had to become the parent for her after this whole tragic event in the story, and so he kind of has to pretend like he's got everything together, and he doesn't, and you know, it's kind of sad.
Yeah, I would love to get into that more, but I don't want to ruin anything after this.
Oh, right. Yeah. Stop. Oh, yeah.
We have to stop. Yeah. Sorry. It's a great film, people, but we can't tell you anymore. Let's start at the beginning. You have a narrator at the beginning, and you kind of start in a weird spot, I thought. I wasn't sure where you were going at the beginning, if that makes sense. Was that always, yeah. I don't know if people have that problem, but the narrator comes in, kind of discusses a bit, and then we go off to a weird scene. I was kind of like, oh, but yeah. Don't get me wrong. 5 minutes in, I totally know why you started here.
Right. Yeah.
But I didn't get it when you first started. So did people have a problem with this, or you just felt, okay, I'm going to plunk them in and they'll figure it out?
I mean, some people do, but you know, I've noticed having done this for close to 10 years now, you know, the audience's mileage just tends to vary from person to person. Some people will love a certain aspect of the film, and some will be like, why did you make that choice? That's weird. That just took me out completely. But for me, I put that in there because I like a little misdirection every now and then. I wanted people to start this and be like, is this a true crime documentary? What is this? Yeah. And then of course it's revealed that it's something that people are watching that's about the events that you're going to see. And it was also trying to get in some sort of exposition about what happened 20 years ago pretty quickly. And in a kind of a more interesting way than just having someone sit there and tell someone, like, you know what happened here 20 years ago, right? And having like a big, you know, urban legend kind of story, which there's a bit of that once the film proper starts. But I didn't want to have all of that exposition done right there because I felt like that would be a little dry. So I thought if it's like a true crime doc, okay. You know, yeah, so you just kind of ease them in with that and then give a little bit more exposition as you go.
Now, as you were filming, our first kill is actually done off screen. So I thought, okay, that's kind of different. I didn't expect that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that builds. I want people to know that builds. So that was your plan to build up your kills? Because they really do build as the film goes.
Yeah, I didn't realize exactly. I think we had planned for something a little gorier with those first two kills, and then we got there to the set and we were like, you know what, let's be classy, because that was, I think, the last major scene that we shot for the film. And so by that point, I think we had just been so covered in blood for the past like few months that we were just like, let's just do something a little more sedate and just kind of classic. I think I've always been more of a proponent of suspense over just shock and blood. This movie does have, I hope, both of those, but I think suspense, especially when you're first starting out, kind of eases them in. And I always think about the original Friday the 13th, how the first kill in that is kind of, you know, you don't really see that, but then as the film goes along, all of a sudden the last big kill is this big grand decapitation and there's this blood spurting. But if you start the movie with that, you know, where do you go to? You can't really build.
True. Now you do have a shot I really want to discuss. Now it looks like a camera's in a trash bag. I think you know the shot I'm thinking of. It's very early.
Oh,
in the film.
Yeah.
And you're shooting up. Now that was awesome. I want to give you full credit for that shot. It was kind of like, I like that from an independent filmmaker. You don't see something creative like that a lot. And I just want to say, why did that come to you?
I always think about weird places to put the camera because, I think most people, I think because of TV, they get so used to, like, you know, medium, wide shot, close up. And it's just kind of, you know, you cut from one person's face to the next and back and forth. And that gets kind of dull. After a while, you're like, okay, can they do something else here? So I'm always trying to find like weird places to put the characters, to where there might be a strange light or just the compositions. I've always been drawn to really strange compositions, and I love to try to find ways to shoot things that just don't look typical.
I like it. Now I also want to discuss, you have a shot of a person hiding behind a chair. I thought was excellent. It's right in the beginning of the film. Okay, should I ruin the
sheet?
The sheet. That was okay. great okay. too. Again, yeah. I got to say you're very inventive of what you do, and it kind of helped me get into it.
Thank you so much.
Watching a lot of film, I sometimes find it. I tell lazy filmmaking I see a lot, and I would say yours is not lazy, and I kind of like that again. Like I wanted to get more in your creative process there again. Was it just shot selection, or is that just something like, this is interesting, I'm going to try it with a sheet?
Well, that particular bit, I can't remember how it was in the script, but I remember my producers, we were using a location that they got, and they said, okay, how about this? This is the house of a woman who's just recently died, and they're trying to sell the house. So wouldn't things be covered in these sheets and stuff, and we could maybe put the killer under a sheet at some point and just have him kind of rise up? And I thought, that's a great idea. So really the sheet thing was them. And they kind of came up with that. And I was inspired by a movie called Hell Night from 1981.
I have seen it.
It's really great. And there's a scene where Linda Blair is next to a bed, I think. And there's this rug on the floor, and the rug starts moving and going up, and there's this person underneath the rug, and he just starts walking. And then you realize that it's like a trap door to some sort of underground basement thing. And that always stuck with me as a really scary idea. And so that was kind of where I got that from.
Yeah, we got two options. Do you want to go to location, or do you want me to discuss knives?
Yeah, I'm fine with whatever.
Okay, let's go to the location first.
Okay.
I have to ask how many locations you use. I mean, I think I have three or four different house locations. God. And I have a restaurant for sure that's different. And I think it's probably the same restaurant at the end, I'm guessing. Yeah. But yeah. I have no idea. You could have had four houses. Like, you have thrown me off. If you've changed all these houses, I'm impressed. Because I could not figure it out. I kept taking notes. New house, maybe? ?
Oh, gosh.
Let
me think. Okay, yeah, there's the house in the prologue. There's probably maybe six or seven houses all together in the film that we used.
Yes.
And then there is the main restaurant location where Justin works.
Yes.
And then there's the bar that they go to.
That's not the same place. Whole thing.
Not the same place, but that is the same place where we shot the scene with the characters of Paige and Hope as they're waiting to go on with their band at that, and then they have that little fight in the alleyway. That's all the same. But and where they where they're eating on a patio early in the film when it's still day.
I'm going to get there later. I do have that a note about that.
That is all the same place. So actually that location we did use for, I guess, maybe technically three different locations, but it was one location. It's so spread out that you can, pick a corner here, a hallway there, and it looks like a completely different place every time.
Okay, I want to go back to the Paige and Hope having food. I was impressed you had somebody else in the seat. Because I'm like, there's nobody at this patio. And then you flash over to somebody. Yeah. I go, I got to give him credit. He totally went to where my brain was going. Come on, buddy. There's got to be somebody else here. And you turned and you showed me somebody. I said, I give him full credit. He thought about my exact problem with the seat.
Well, that's always – I mean, that's the indie film – problem.
Yes.
Normally.
That's it. And you fixed it in one second. I was so happy.
And a fun fact is the guy that you see at the end there is the guy who plays the trash man, just without all the garb on. So that's a fun little fact.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. That is his unmasked cameo.
There you go, people. You heard it here, so you got to watch the movie now.
I think it's
talking about.
I think he's just called Guy on Patio or something. I don't know.
Oh, that's so funny. So let's back up. How did you get all seven different houses? Like, some of these are very distinct.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had used the main house, Caroline and Justin's house, in my previous film, Children of Sin. And I love that house. And the people that own the house are fantastic. And they love to have us there. And it's just a great location. It just drips with just all kinds of character, and that's tough.
Oh, 100%.
It's really tough to find a house that has character now, because everybody just paints everything, you know, white and beige and gray, and you're just like, how do you photograph this? You know, there's just nothing there. And what I love about that house is that it has so much personality, and that was all of the homes. I think the house we used in the first scene was our producer's grandmother's house, so it was pretty much all set. It had like all these little, you know, old timey things, and it was just great. So we didn't really have to dress that house much. And then the house I think where Marita and Hope live, that was I think that same producer's cousin's house. And it had a lot of character too. So we got really, really lucky.
Well, that's good. It's hard as an indie. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Costuming. I find you dress different characters differently.
Oh, yeah.
I want to get into that. It was like, you have obviously his mom has a very gothic look, I will say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
I really felt she was ripped out of a horror novel, like one of those mm-hmm. people that's up on the cliff and just waiting.
Absolutely. That's what I was going for. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I did get a little bit of Psycho vibe from her a little bit as Norman. If you're going for that, you hit it.
Totally.
Melita is the one I want to discuss. Marita, I have her down as M-I-L-O-T-A. I think that's what I tried to say. She's a very distinct look, and some of the lipstick and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm like, where did these ideas come from? Like, that's not a written on the page thing. That's got to be something later.
Yeah. I mean, I think on the page, it was probably just like, you know, she dresses in bright colors, and then you have to translate that, because I wanted her to be like a very up, kind of happy, peppy kind of person. Because of course, if she's going to spend a lot of time with Caroline, who's, you know, not, it would be good to have a little bit of a balance there. So I wanted her to be really bright. So she has, you know, pinks and, you know, the bright blues and reds and yellows. And she's just always dressed really brightly. And that was the same with Justin. We put him in that really bright yellow shirt, because yellow is such a kind of bright, optimistic color, which is not what's going on in his head whatsoever, but he wants to project that to the world. So that's why he's dressed as this sort of bright kind of canary, you know? I mean, those were the main ones that I remember really thinking about the most. And then for Hope and Paige, when they were in their band, that was really fun. We actually got on eBay and we got a lot of stuff from the 80s, and we got this big poofy kind of shoulder padded kind of blazer, I guess, for Paige, and that was so much fun. That was a blast. I believe Meredith, who plays Paige, got the earrings that were, I think they're like mixtapes that are just like dangling. I thought that was really, really fun. Super cool.
So your costuming was done by you, or was it done by someone else?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we just kind of – I mean, really, it's mostly – I will tell the actors kind of what I want, and they'll be like, well, I've got a shirt that's like this. Will that work? And I'll be like, sure, or maybe we can go and we can get something else. So sometimes we do have to buy stuff, but usually it's just kind of like from people's closets, or if we really can't find that, we'll – try to go out there, and we might go to a Goodwill or eBay or something and find clothes that will fit the character.
Yeah. Is Hattiesburg Hattiesfield?
Hattiesburg. No. That is a real town in Mississippi. It's real. It is a real place. Yes. It is real.
So, you added a lot of sound effects. Did you have a lot of fun doing that?
Oh, that's my favorite part. I love editing. That's my absolutely no contest. My favorite part of the process. Yeah, because
me and you are totally different.
Well, it's like the writing can be fun when it's going well, but any writer will tell you it goes well like maybe 10% of the time. The rest is hard work. And then pre-production's fun because you start to cast and stuff like that. Shooting it is really probably my least favorite part, because so much is unpredictable. You can plan every day, every shot, and something will go wrong every single day. And it's really more about like just kind of trying to, I guess, troubleshoot. That's really what it's like on a set. And then by the time you get to editing the film, it's so freeing and so much fun because you just, as you start to cut each scene, you start to actually see a movie for the first time. And sometimes it's not what you imagine, but sometimes it's in a positive way. And you go, oh, I didn't know that if you put that sound with this shot here, it would have this effect. And it's so much fun. And you can kind of switch the sound effects out and add the music, change the music, and it has a completely different effect. And it's so much fun to play with all of that stuff. So I love it. That's the best.
I forgot to ask, so look at the trash man. How much time did you spend on that?
That was, I'm trying to think. I mean, we looked at a lot of masks, I think, and we finally settled on one. We modified it a bit because you could see the eyes, and I never wanted you to see the eyes. I think that kind of makes it, it kind of takes away the scariness, I think, when you can sort of humanize him. So we put some netting inside the mask over the eyes. So it was
okay.
And then the overalls, I think that might have, I think I saw, it might have been Friday the 13th part 2. I think Jason wore those, and I thought that was always so cool. I liked that. And plus, it kind of looked like a kid. So it was almost like he was trapped in this sort of arrested development thing. Like it looked like something a kid would wear. So he's still kind of like a kid. He's just kind of trapped in this weird little head space.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the knife things before I forget. Did you try out different knives? I mean, you do try. I mean, obviously different people in the movie use different knives. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it at that. But did you have your killer? Your killer seems to be very selective. What do you like?
Yes, yes. We had a few prop knives. And I think we only usually use the real knives if it's a shot of someone being stabbed, like a close-up.
Okay.
And then, like, if they just pick it up, that's fine. But for safety, you always want to have the fake ones. And so these – we found these, and they were great. They looked pretty realistic. So most of them are the same. I think – I'm trying to remember all the knives. Yeah, there's – I think there's at least two or three different types that I can think of in the film. And I think they're all – I think for the most part, they're all prop knives.
Yeah, I'm going to go back again. Music. You use music throughout your film constantly. It's subtle and it's in. So let's discuss a little bit of that.
Sure. Yeah. Our composer is a guy named Luke Zwelski, and he's done the music for my past four films, and he just gets it. He gets exactly what I want. I usually score the films. I score the rough cut with a temp score. So that he can hear kind of the tone that I'm trying to go for in every scene. And usually he produces something that's even better than what was in the temp score. But he gets it. He gets that sort of John Carpenter vibe, which is the kind of music I love in a horror film. I love that synthy kind of brooding, dread-filled kind of a sound.
Interesting, interesting. Okay. I'm going to go back to my notes. Rosen Page score outside. Where was this shot? I love that scene.
When Page is outside.
Rosen Page score. Weed. Don't they get weed at some point or something? Rose gets some weed.
I don't think so. I don't remember a character named Rose. I don't know.
Maybe it's Hope and Page. Hope and Page score outside.
It would probably be Hope and Page. Yeah. Yeah.
I wrote down Rose. Hope and Page score some weed or something. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think they scored weed.
Oh, God. Then where was I going with this?
So they're outside?
They're outside.
Okay, they're outside.
It's before they have the food.
Okay, before the food. Okay, so this was okay, I'm trying to think.
Don't worry about it.
Think of my own movie now.
All right. I should have – I can tell you roughly it's around the 48-55 mark.
Okay, so this is – okay.
Don't worry about it. We can move on. I don't care. All three women have the same lipstick at one point.
Oh, they do?
They all have the same lipstick at one point.
I never noticed that. Really?
Yes, I made a note of it because you have a three shot. One, two, three. I'm like, why are they all wearing the same lipstick?
Oh, is this Hope and Paige and Marita?
Yes, in they're all wearing the same lipstick.
In the garage? Okay, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. Now I can see it. Okay.
Was there a point to that? Or is it just happened?
I think it's just they're fun characters. So you want to have a fun color.
Okay. See, I make notes. I do watch the film. this is an important thing. Mom's talking to Mom a lot.
Right.
Now, I have a question. Is the actor playing Mom's mom in the same room, or she CGI'd in? Because I could not figure it out.
She is in the same room. That was all practical.
Okay.
What we would do is we would usually try to have a different kind of a light on the mom.
Yes.
So that's what was throwing me off. Ghostly and weird and kind of strange, like it was some sort of supernatural thing. Because we definitely wanted to show that, you know, this isn't real. This is all in her head. This is not something because we didn't really want people to think that it was real, because, you know, she's sort of a metaphor for Caroline's anxiety. And so we never wanted it to we didn't want people to be confused as to what was going on. So we tried to make her very obviously kind of spectral, and sort of she kind of disappears into the darkness. She's always kind of blurry in the background. You never get a really good look at her. And so, yeah, we just wanted her to be kind of ghostly and strange.
So there's no ADR there. That's all practical. That voice, everything.
Oh, no. Now, the voice is actually the actress who played Caroline playing her mother. So she's doing that. Yeah. Yeah.
So
that was dubbed. But I think on the set, I remember she recorded the lines and was playing them on a phone. So she had her doing the lines, but the actress playing the mom in the background was just sort of lip syncing to those lines.
Ah, because see, I was trying to figure that out the whole movie. I'm like,
oh yeah,
yeah. I want to go. Did you do this on purpose? You never showed me the mom till the very end.
Yeah, yeah.
I tried everything to figure out what mom looked like. And I'm not joking. I'm like pausing, like, why is he not letting me in? Because I wanted to know.
I wanted
and
her
to do it at the very end. You finally
you
give
see
me
her
what
a
I'm
bit more.
For.
Yeah, you do finally get to see more.
And was that on purpose?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I wanted her to be mysterious and kind of like she's really, in some ways, she's just as much of a villain as the trash man.
100%.
She is, you know, completely just made her daughter this shell of a person throughout her life now. And so I wanted her to be kind of spooky, and you never really get a good look at her. I mean, and
I will do a lot. You do give me one good look at her at the very end of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say anything more. Because that'll ruin something if I say something. So I'm not going to say anything else. But people, it is there. You just got to wait. The trash man's movements.
Mm-hmm.
Again, all practical. Did you slow him down at all? Because it looks very slow at times. But maybe it's your filming style again.
Oh, I think there was maybe one shot. I do remember in a certain death scene, I think I sped up him raising a knife and bringing it down. I think that might have been the only thing I really had to speed up or slow down or do anything like that. I think it was all Derek who played him. He knew exactly what I wanted and just totally delivered.
Okay. There's a scene that somebody brings takeout to the house.
Yes. Yes.
What is in the takeout bags?
Okay. What was the brand? I think one of them was a Lean Cuisine something, and the other was, I think, a Boston Market frozen dinner that we heated up and stuck in there. And after filming in that room for, you know, a little while, it got kind of gross because it was just no one was touching it, and it was just sitting there, and we were all like, oh, God, it's nasty.
Okay. Casting of actors. Did you know who you wanted to cast in these roles? Obviously yourself. We knew that. Was the trash man decided, or did he come into audition?
Most of it, I really had a good time with my last movie because we had this wonderful cast and crew. And I said, I want to make another film and I want to work with everybody one more time. So when I was writing this, I wrote parts for everybody. So they weren't, so I don't think anyone had to audition. I just was like, I wrote this part for you. We're going to shoot on these dates. Can you do it? And thankfully, I think most everybody that I offered it to said yes. So, the ones that didn't accept, I did have to find people to do that. But once again, I don't think it was a audition. I think it was people I had worked with before, maybe not on the last film specifically, but I did know the people that were going to be cast. So that helps a lot, because then you don't have to do the casting and go through all the files of the audition tapes and say, oh, well, I like their one take there, but that second take I didn't really feel that. You know, there's so much stuff that goes into that process, which can be very, very fun and rewarding, but it's a lot of work.
So writing, like you said, you shot this one day here, 2 days there, 3 days there. Mm-hmm. So you've obviously written the script, it's ready to go, but how hard is it for you to write this knowing that you're going to shoot in such an erratic way?
I don't think I actually knew how we were going to shoot as I was writing it, but because I usually try not to think about that until after I've written the script, because sometimes you'll write something and you'll be like, we can't really pull that off. So you have to change it, especially with a horror film. And so much of a horror film is about the location. So you can't really plan much until you have the location. I think we knew we had that one main location for Caroline and Justin's house. But besides that, it was kind of like, I think we knew we had the restaurant, so I could write stuff for that. But besides those two, it was kind of like, okay, we're going to write a chase scene for these two characters at this house, but we haven't seen the location yet. So how do we know where they're going to hide or where they're going to run to and stuff like that? You can't really plan that until you have a location. So it's really tough. And that honestly makes it really hard to write those kinds of scenes, because you're like, I mean, why bother? Because you're just going to have to change it anyway. So you might as well just be like, they run, they hide in the closet. You know, it's like every house probably has a closet, hopefully, you know, so you just don't know.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm laughing. That is just funny. Okay. I think that's it for my questions for your film. I think I've done well. Unless I missed something, feel free to tell me now I have, but I don't think I have. So I have some fun questions for you before we wrap up.
Sure.
Your favorite film?
Oh, okay. Favorite movie of all time would probably be Carrie, I think.
I can expect that.
That's my favorite.
Favorite director?
Oh, God. Oh, that one's actually really tough. I've got so many that I love. I love... Oh God. I mean, I guess I'd have to say Hitchcock, because everybody's influenced by Hitchcock, who makes these kinds of movies. So it all goes right back to him.
And the last one's really easy. Your favorite movie snack?
Movie snack? Junior Mints. I love them.
So do I, actually.
They're so good. They're so good. I love them.
And before I let you go, tell everybody where they can find your film. I guess they just run a Google search and it'll pop up and they can rent it. Or is it on Tubi or anything?
It is on Tubi and it is on Amazon. So if you want to send the indie filmmaker a few bucks, you can rent it or buy it on Amazon. And if you want to watch it for free and still support indie film, you can watch it on Tubi, because those ads do actually help us, believe it or not.
Oh, they do. They really do. Tell everybody where they can find your other projects. You only told us about one film. You have three more.
I've got a movie called Children of Sin. That was my previous film before this. That is also on Amazon and Tubi. And I have A Stranger Among the Living, which is on both of those as well. And before that, I made a movie called Triggered and Blessed Are the Children, which I think Blessed Are the Children is on Freevee now. And Triggered is on Roku and Plex, I think. I didn't distribute those two, so I don't really know what they're doing. That's all them. So I don't know. But those two are available on DVD still, I think. I think they're still in print. I'm not sure.
Okay, I'm going to ask one last question then. Where can they buy the DVDs?
Stranger Among the Living is on DVD on Amazon. And Children of Sin is on DVD and Blu-ray on a website called makeflix.com.
And should we expect The Trash Man to be on DVD soon?
Oh, I hope so. I really do. It's in talks, so hopefully soon.
Well, thank you for your time and have a great evening.
Thank you.